This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
And you ride on a broomstick to places far distant.
Familiar, we can't go.
Were you Whittington's friend?
The Pied Piper's assistant.
Have you been an alumnus of heaven or hell?
Are you mean like a minx?
Are you lean like a lynx?
Are you keen to be seen
when you're smelling the rat?
Were you there when the pharaohs commissioned the sphinx?
If you weren't, you are. You're a Jellicle cat. Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats. Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats. Jellicle songs for Jellicle.
Good evening. You are listening to Pop Culture with me, Sharmila Ganesan, and with me, as always, Arvind Yuvaraj and Lee Chui Lin. And joining us today, a special guest, fellow Jellicle... Well, I'm not going to say fellow. Resident.
We're all fellow Jellicle cats here.
You'd like to think so, Julian. Julian Yap, also a resident pop culture fan. And if that hadn't cued you in already, we are going to sort of... talk about that grand disaster of a movie that came out.
I can't tell if that song is in my head or if it's in the studio.
No, we're still playing it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I didn't go mad after watching it. Okay.
So can I just say, right, that the reason I sound like this is because I watched Cats. So I haven't been able to be on air for the last 2 days because I didn't want to scare your children.
But she came on just to make it worthwhile for having watched the movie.
Because here's the thing. I watched it on Monday night. And if I'm not able to come on air and talk about it on Thursday, then why did I watch it?
What was the sacrifice?
It's a cruel joke. It's a cruel, cruel joke.
So yes, I'm deeply excited to talk about Cats.
So if you haven't heard already, Cats is probably one of the worst reviewed films of last year. I think as of now, it's rated something like 2.8 on IMDb.
Wow.
And it's been out for almost a month. So, you know, there have been some hilarious reviews, you know, real sort of scathing reasons why nobody should watch it unless maybe they're high. But I think the way we'd like to sort of go about the show today is the first half of the show, we're going to be talking about these grand flops of movies. And then a little later on, we're kind of going to go the complete other extreme. Because
very lofty.
Yes. Mm. Because this week, the Oscar nominations also came out. So we're going to kind of talk about what makes movies great.
Talk about like polar opposites.
Yes, but that's how we do things around here.
Are they really polar? Cats is really that great. It deserves the Oscar.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, if you're wondering why we had Julian join us on the show today.
It wasn't obvious already.
It's because she's one of the sole voices crying out from the void about the merits of this movie.
It sounds like a cat.
That's, again, terrifying for me. I mean, let's backtrack a little bit, right? So, amazing Andrew Lloyd Webber musical has, you know, great reviews for the stage version. What did we think of the movie version? Other than Julian, we know already.
So we're not starting with the positives.
Well, maybe a quick roundup of like, did we really hate it that much? This side of the room.
Yeah. Not because it was weird. Like, I watch a lot of weird things. Like, I like a lot of like Adult Swim and Paradise PD and lots of weird shows and Tim and Eric and stuff. So it wasn't the weirdness. I think it was just the boringness and the fact that a lot of people in the movie thought it was a serious movie. Mm-hmm. So they took it seriously and they gave her like serious performances. And I didn't like that at all. I was like, what is happening? Because if they leaned into the weirdness of the movie, I think I would have enjoyed it a lot more. So that's just my take, like my initial take. I don't know what everybody in the movie thought of the movie when they signed on to it.
That dissonance is my favorite part, though. The fact that nobody seems to know what movie they were making. I recently heard, just on an off tangent, about an actually good film. I just recently heard Tom Hanks talking about recording his scenes as Woody for Toy Story 4. And he said that it got to the point where he had to turn away from the animators because their faces were stressing him out. Because he could tell that they didn't know necessarily how things were going to go. And so, and that they were going to have to animate to his voice. And every time he went in, it was sort of like on a knife's edge and he just couldn't do it. And that, I think, feels to me in a weird way like what Cats did, because I don't think anybody on the set actually knew how things were going to look. Because A, if they did, I don't think anybody would have agreed to whiskers coming from your upper lip and not your cheeks. And also fur on your forehead. So I think there are just some fundamental things.
Fur, just too much fur.
There's a lot of fur.
Does not look real.
So, you know, also, Arvin and I were in separate screenings where people walked out, right?
Yeah.
So I started with about 8 people in the room and ended up with just 2 of us, which felt very luxurious. But that also kind of made me lean into the madness that is Cats. I mean, was I bored? Yes. Was I disgusted? Utterly. Did I think that some songs, which were great to begin with, were ruined completely? Will I watch it again? I think the answer is yes. I don't know why. This thing has just wormed its way into my head in that I don't know if Andrew Lloyd Webber made a deal with somebody. I don't get it. And somehow all of it is just there. Like, listening to it again, I can see the ridiculous, like, twitchy dance moves. I don't
twitchy
get
it. Twitchy is the right word. Yeah. It's like twitchy dance moves.
Twitchy, I feel like they straight up veer into being vulgar. Like, I feel like I'm watching things that I shouldn't be watching in public.
Maybe that's why there's so many like late night screenings.
Oh, God.
It's like the people who are ashamed to go see it.
Oh, God. Well, now to sort of go on to the other side of it, Julian. So you are a fan of the Broadway musical.
Yes,
and
love
that's
the musical.
What drew you to the movie in the first place.
Yeah, I grew up with the music, and this was exactly what I expected. I don't see how it. I don't see how it could be good. I guess, like, I don't see how they could have put out a version where this made sense. Tom Hooper did an interview recently where he was saying that after making Les Mis in 2012, he wanted to put to use all of the knowledge that he'd gotten from making a musical on screen. So he was like, well, I'm going to do it with my favorite musical of all time, Cats. And yeah, that's what I would do as well if I had all this knowledge and money. And it just kind of fell apart, but in the best way, because everything is working in the worst way. None of the music makes sense. None of the, you know, like you said, none of the dance moves make sense. Some of the interactions between the actors don't even seem like they're in the same room together. Mm-hmm. It can't work. And I derive so much joy and pleasure from that. It's my new Christmas movie, definitely. I would definitely watch. I would
Do
recommend
you want
this to
everyone. Ruin Christmas? I don't get it.
I find genuine, actual, unironic, like, joy from this film, because nothing can be worse.
No, but, you know, I think that brings us to kind of the central line or issue here, right? Which is, what determines when a movie crosses that line? Because even here in the studio, we're pretty evenly split. Like, 2 of us think that this movie is so bad that it somehow transcends everything into great. And then 2 of us are just, I think...
Like, why did I see this?
I almost feel like you guys don't want to have seen it, right?
So the so bad it's good line is something that exists, right? And that's something we are going to talk about more later on the show. Mm. But for me, this didn't cross that line. And partly it was because so much of it was also boring.
Yeah.
So much of it felt like I fell asleep. Like, there are parts that I've blocked out because I just couldn't deal with how long it took for it to get through certain scenes. And I was like, no. So bad it's good for me needs to have so much crazy sort of entertainment or just OTT-ness that I want to keep watching. This didn't have that.
Yeah, this for this movie, when the credit sequence started, I was like, oh, please don't shame these people. Like, this movie doesn't need a credit sequence. Like, just end it. Like, don't attach anyone's name to this movie. They don't want to see it. So that's
McCavity.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I don't think people like Idris Elba or Judi Dench are going to be looking back at this as one of their career highlights.
Mm-hmm. You know who will, though? Jason Derulo and Taylor Swift, who seem like they're having the best time of their lives.
And Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen was a cat. Like, really, if there ever was a cat on screen, I think it was McKellen.
Mm-hmm. A cat with pathos. A kathos. Or a cathos? I don't know. But yeah, whatever that is, that cat.
So if you've watched Cats, if you're a fan, if you hate it, if you never want to ever hear of them again, you can let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or call us at 03-7733-2900. You are listening to Popcorn Culture, and we'll be back shortly to talk about other movies that were so bad that they were good.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well. Was the chilling sound of your doom.
This is the way the world could end.
Please, show some mercy.
With ice. With a kiss.
Mm.
With venom. I probably should have mentioned this. I'm poison. Poison ivy.
And the only man who can stop them.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
Can't do it alone.
Well, welcome back to Popcorn Culture, where we also talk about the not-so-good movies, as well as the healthy side of what creates this milieu that we call pop culture in the first place. With me, as they are every week, Arvin Yuraj and Lee Chui Lin.
Not poison, poison ivy.
Mr. Freeze, well, chill.
You guys can decide who's who between the both of you. I'm clearly Batman. And also joining us for this special, for her special sensibility on what makes good bad movies good, rather. Julian Yap.
I'm Robin. I'm Robin today.
And a Jellicle Cat, always. And
always.
Mm. Yes. So in honor, dubious honor of cats, we are kind of talking about what makes these movies sort of flop disastrously and what gets them to live on, you know, in pop culture as these movies that were so bad that they were good. So we spent a good bit of time talking about Cats before the break. And now I'm interested to know what other movies kind of fall into this pleasurable but horrible category. But we do have some people have written in about Cats, right?
Yeah, so Suying says, Cats is a musical, doesn't translate well onto the big screen. That's why it flopped. It was doomed before it got screened. Also, the musical is based on T.S. Eliot's poems, which, let's face it, the average moviegoer is not into poetry. As a musical, it's also considered old-fashioned already when you compare it to the likes of Hamilton, etc. Some things are just meant to be left for the stage.
Also, those T.S. Eliot poems were meant for children. So I think that that's an important thing to say, right? It's not as if you're translating the wasteland onto the stage. Instead, you're talking about things that were really kind of nonsensical little ditties that were never really meant to be taken seriously and to be translated into some sort of life and death and reincarnation situation, which this musical attempts to do.
So sometimes that's part of the problem, I think. And Arvin, you mentioned this earlier, this self-seriousness or trying to overreach the boundary of what a certain genre or story can do.
Yeah.
What are some of the other movies that you guys think are so bad are good? We had one example earlier.
Batman Robin. Justice League. I enjoyed Justice League. I think that movie is like so bad it's good. Like I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I saw it with you for the fifth time.
Yes. Arvin actually came and watched it with me for the fifth time and halfway through, even the first time, I was like, why am I doing this?
And I was enjoying it. I was like halfway through my popcorn. I was like, ooh, this is fun. So Justice League is one of it. And my other pick would be Van Helsing. Van Helsing is such a bad movie. But I like every time it's on, like it just showed up on Netflix 2 months ago. And I saw it like from start to finish.
So what makes these movies so bad that they're good?
I think there has to be some sort of... I just think it's so subjective, right? Because it's this magical formula that comes together with what mood you're in, how you feel about if there's source material, how you feel about the source material, who you're watching it with, I think is so important. Like, are you kind of both reveling in the ridiculousness or are you counting every ringgit that's left your wallet in service of watching this movie, all the things that have brought you here? 'Cause I think something like I'm a sucker for the Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
Same.
And I'm also weirdly a sucker for Sex and the City. And in both, I can tell you exactly what it is. With Sex and the City, I have a fondness for the television shows that have in no way translated on screen, but I'm just like, yeah, whatever. It's like a holiday for my brain. You know, it's fine. I'll just sit there in the company of these friends that perhaps we've all outgrown, but whatever. And in Pirates of the Caribbean, there's an escapism, I think, that appeals to me, despite the fact that I know they're bad. You know, you can feel it in every fiber of your being. These are not good movies. So I think that you need that kind of combination of everything to come together or somebody, I mean, look at what's happening here, right? Somebody's so good it's bad movie just becomes other people's I can't believe you watched that.
I think the idea of the company that you watch the movie in is interesting because that actually counts for a lot because you associate the fun that you had watching a really bad movie. For me, I always think of, I don't know if people even remember this, Alexander starring Colin Farrell.
Yep.
How could one forget?
Yeah. So, you know, it was so hyped and Farrell was on the cusp of becoming a big movie star. It came on the wake of Troy, so everyone was really excited. Angelina Jolie was in it. And then it was just a dumpster fire. It was terrible. But I watched it with my sister. Mm-hmm. And I remember from the moment he came on screen with his long blonde wig to the end, we didn't stop laughing. And so now that's become one of our sort of fond, terrible movies memories. And so for me, that's a So Bad It's Good.
And I think for me, a one that I'll always remember, as especially with the company that I watched it in, is Mamma Mia and Mamma Mia 2, which aren't necessarily bad movies, mm-hmm. So Bad They're Good, but there are bad choices in there that you necessarily wouldn't see in a film. But with that, it's the perfect combination of enjoyable enough that it draws you in, that you're genuinely very brought along for the ride, and it's very like with Cats, like there's moments that you do actually feel like you are a part of in this case musicals. So it's a combination of the terrible and the good that you want to go in just for that 5 minutes, I think.
Do you think the people in bad movies know that they're in bad movies when making them, like there's what is the movie what's his name? Jupiter Ascending. Jupiter Ascending is like the notoriously bad movie. Channing Tatum.
No, yes. They felt like they were taking it way too seriously as well.
Eddie Redmayne knew. I think he knew when he was two.
But I feel like there's a point where they realize, you know, and it's like halfway through the movie you realize this is when they filmed for like 3 months. They know that they're wasting their time, but they can't get out of the contract.
No, I ask because there are movies, like even big movies, let's say like Star Wars, and you have like good actors in it. Ian McDiarmid, so he came back to be the Emperor, and the guy who plays General Hux is Donald Gleason. Yeah, so he's a good actor, but they know the kind of movies they are in, so they give it their all. They ham it up. They chew the scenery, that, you know, whatever scene they get, they just give their all. To an extent that it's comical. They know that it's supposed to look like cartoonish. Do you think that people who were like in Batman and Robin or Van Helsing or Justice League sort of knew it was a troubled production, so they just went the other way instead of trying too hard?
I think Arnold Schwarzenegger knew.
He knew for sure.
But that's also because he's a genre actor. Yes. So I think when you're a genre actor who's accustomed to doing things a certain way for a certain style, then perhaps it's a little bit easier. But I actually think that sometimes having a very fine actor put in a very cheesy performance next to very earnest under actors can actually be a really great formula for success, because it puts everything in stark contrast, right? You're watching this very good actor do something truly wonderful and terrible, and then you're also watching someone who perhaps is not that good an actor try to reach, and I think that is a great thing to watch. So I'm thinking here of also Twilight, and how,
oh my god, you went there.
No, honestly, because Twilight is my cheer up movie.
I genuinely love Twilight in the same way that I love Cats. Yes, exactly. For this reason.
Mm. I watch all the Twilight movies quite regularly, and I used to make a date to watch each of them as they came up, just because they were so bad they're good.
I find them deeply cheerful, and you know, and so the actor that I'm thinking of here is Michael Sheen. Yes. He of the you know, and that is such a great, really skillful moment from a skillful actor in a scene that was perfect for it, right? It's there's no other word for it aside from ripe. It's just such a ripe scene. And I think that, like, they were all already so bad it's good, and then they just crossed the line even further. It's just delicious.
It's the Tommy Lee Jones in Batman Forever effect.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he didn't have to do that movie. There's no reason why Tommy Lee Jones needed to be in that movie. Mm-hmm. They sort of promised him, I think he was supposed to be the Joker, and then he became Two-Face, and then they threw, like, Jim Carrey in there. So whatever he did was sort of overshadowed by Jim Carrey doing the same thing. So there's no reason for someone like him to be in Batman Forever. But the fact that he was in it, and he tried, and it's the one movie where he steps out of his comfort zone is still funny to this day. But yeah, so I can never figure out, like, do they know they're in these movies?
So if we're going back to the idea of Batman and Robin,
yes,
right? George Clooney is the one that I feel kind of sorry for, because
he had no idea.
and you can kind of see somewhere between the suit with the nipples to
the bad credit card
that it like dawns on him, you know, and then he just loses all spirit. It's the saddest thing.
It's quite sad.
Speaking of whether you know or don't know, isn't the Schadenfreude part of the deliciousness?
Yes.
I mean, that's part of it. It's sick to say, but when you're watching somebody who has no idea go through the motions, you're like, yes, dance for me. and it has its own particular delights.
So the thing is, we do have some responses on Twitter.
Yeah, so this is from Amirul Haziman, who says, movies that transcend into the so bad in good spectrum, definitely The Room and Batman Robin. The Room is legendary. I think that's...
Wait, am I thinking of The Wrong Room?
No, you're thinking of, are you thinking of Tommy Wiseau?
No. That's no. Tommy Wiseau. Yeah. Oh, Tommy Wiseau.
The, yes. The article is everything. It's right. Room or
right.
The Room.
Okay, there we go. All right, yes.
Yes, so that is, I think that is like the king of so bad it's good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that movie is even good. Like, it's so bad, it's bad. But it's your choice if you just want to consume something that's you know, like borderline toxic.
But yet he had a movie made about him. No?
James
yeah.
Franco?
Yeah, there you go.
That's because James Franco is you know, loopy. So.
I think that The Room works for me, but I know people who can't watch it without their body curdling into secondhand embarrassment. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it really is one of those things where you play them as you see them, right? It really depends.
There's also a message from E.E. Zaid who says, good, bad movies. Can't believe you haven't mentioned The Room. We just did. The seminal work by Tommy Wiseau. Yeah. So that one, it like reigns supreme, like bad movie.
And there's some value to these bad movies, right? I mean, if you think of, and for me, one of my favorite movies is actually Ed Wood. And so it's a movie made about a bad a filmmaker with just a track record of making bad films. But give it 20 years or 30 years and suddenly it becomes a sort of something that you look back at fondly.
Yeah.
And you praise his dedication to his craft. I use that word loosely.
With air quotes.
Yeah. And you have someone like Johnny Depp playing him, which... So I think there's some value to these films that, you know, even if they're bad at that time, may end up being quite emblematic of a particular way of looking at the world, maybe.
I mean, just look at the amount of joy that the bad movies we've already brought up have brought to all of us. I mean, like, I really think that there is a very particular enjoyment to be derived, and it's one that I like. Bad movies, I almost feel like you can rewatch them more often because you're less precious about them. And each time you watch it, you pick up something new that's just more embarrassing than before. And there's something kind of great about it. I've forgotten so much about Mr. Freeze that now when I go back, I'm just going to re-hate, re-love it all over again.
Who surprised me was actually Uma Thurman, because I rewatched how bad she was as Poison Ivy, and I'm like, oh my God, that's the bride.
Yes,
she was
exactly.
Poison Ivy once.
Exactly. She was just a few years away from doing that.
But also, you have to be Uma Thurman for it to be that performance. Like, if anyone else did that, it wouldn't have worked. It has to be her doing Poison Ivy for Poison Ivy to be this, to have the kind of traction that even in 2020 we're talking about Batman and Robin.
Well, so do you, like us, obviously enjoy the so bad they're good movies? Let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 03-7733-2900. We do need to take a quick break, but when we're back, we're going to sort of swing to the other end of the spectrum and talk about the recently released Oscar nominations. This is Popcorn Culture on BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
A couple of rules, though. No cursing, no off-color material. We do a clean show, okay? Mm-hmm. You go on right after Dr. Sally.
I love Dr. Sally.
Good. Well, someone will come and get you, okay?
Perfect.
Good luck.
Thanks, Murray.
Good.
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
What's wrong with your real name?
That's what you called me on the show, a Joker. Do you remember?
Welcome back to Popcorn Culture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with Lee Chui Lin and Arvind Yuvaraj, and with our special guest, still Jellicle Cat, Julian Yeo.
Forever Jellicle Cat.
So we are going to be talking about the Oscar nominations, if you haven't guessed already from that clip that we just played.
Mm-hmm. 11 nominations for Joker.
Yeah, but before that, clearly a lot of you have a lot of passionate thoughts about movies that were so bad that they're good, which is what we were talking about before the break. Can we check in with some of them?
Yeah, so many good suggestions. Apple Cross XX says, movies that are so bad that they are good. What about the Final Destination franchise? What do you think? Some of the Final Destinations are good. I think they're like legit good.
The first
good
one
movies.
Is like good. It's not like bad good.
Yeah.
Like it makes sense why they put money into a whole franchise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind
the
of.
Others, not so much. And then Numbers 4286 says, please discuss Mars Attacks, guys. That was bad.
Oh, I don't
know. Come on.
I feel like Tim Burton knew what he was doing with that movie. It was intended to be satirical completely. I love Mars Attacks.
And it's so him.
It's so
him. It's so him.
So I think Mars Attacks is really ridiculous and can be read a number of ways, right? Like, so if you read it as a just utterly bad film, if you could get back in touch with us and let us know if you still enjoyed it anyway, I would love to know that because I think that it's that kind of movie. But you could also read it as just like a tribute to these nutty worries about space invasion, right? And and it's a very like genre-driven movie, I feel, which Tim Burton does really well.
Mm-hmm. And then numbers 5798 says, please talk about the Sharknado series if you have watched any of it before. And yeah, so that's a bad, bad movie. That's a legit bad, bad movie.
What do you mean? The concept of a Sharknado isn't enough for
no,
you?
No, that's genius. That's genius. So the concept is genius. The execution is like, oh my God.
So like Cats. Cats the movie.
Anyway. Whoa, whoa, Sharknado slightly better than Cats.
Can I just quickly jump in and say that Piranha 3 Double D is an underrated, awful movie classic because it's so good. And like the title alone tells you that everybody knows what's up. And there is like, and there's a beautiful 80s cameo that appears in it that just works. And like, it is such an awful film. And I really loved it.
Is that like the third or the second movie in the franchise? That's like the third, right?
Hence 3DD, my friend.
Yeah, I got slightly excited when they announced that. I'm ashamed to say
I'm not a big fan of the aquatic monster genre.
Sure. That's
so
fair.
These I've taken a step back from. So I think moving on from movies that were bad, perhaps we can move on to talking about movies that most people seem to think are actually good. Debatable. Mm-hmm. But the Oscar nominations just came out earlier this week. And wow, there are some big names on there. And what better time than to talk about it today when we've already talked about the worst kind of movies we've watched. Leading the pack, of course, is Joker, starring Joaquin Phoenix, directed by Todd Phillips. It's got 11 nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Score. We also have Sam Mendes' 1917. Which we reviewed yesterday. And Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood each got 10 nominations, both including Best Picture. The Irishman by Martin Scorsese got 10 nominations. And other Best Picture nominees include, let's see, Marriage Story, Ford vs. Ferrari, Jojo Rabbit, Little Women, and Parasite. So some real heavy hitters there.
Yes, but also... Okay, so the thing about... What I want from the Oscar nominations is, of course, you want them once in a while to acknowledge that people want to watch movies, right? Because that's a classic problem.
Sometimes it feels like they don't actually enjoy movies at all.
That's the thing. So that's a classic problem with the Academy Award nominees, right? Sometimes they only reward the really, really serious, overly serious art house-y sort of things that nobody else has seen. And so things that people genuinely enjoy just kind of never get a look in. But then other times, like this year, it's so predictable. I just want something that's a little bit weird, that's a little bit unexpected. I'm thinking, for example, of Yorgos Lanthimos and The Favourite, which was nominated last year, I believe. And just something that I'm like, ooh, really? You weirdos think this weird movie is good? Awesome. And I suppose this year that's Parasite, but it somehow doesn't feel like enough.
It almost feels like Parasite had gotten so much buzz already that they almost couldn't not nominate it.
Yeah. But also, I get what you mean. Is like it was this year's card is super predictable. But also, I like how stacked it is. Because every year I see the list of nominees and there are like maybe three or four that I think are good movies. The others were in there because of, I don't know, the Academy likes it or some weird reason that they came up with. And I don't... I wouldn't be able to justify why those movies are in there. I wouldn't even want to watch those movies. This year, like every single movie in the Best Picture list, I want to check out. I've seen like maybe five of them, and the others I honestly want to see in the theater. So I think they're like legitimately good movies, but they are like super predictable, like what you said. It was like a known thing that they would put these movies in the bracket.
I think it's so also going back to what you said about being stacked. I think that just makes it a little bit less... interesting. It kind of feels like they had 10 DVDs and these are the 10 DVDs that they just allocated awards to and nominations to. And it does feel like, so of course last year we did have the suggestion that they revoked very quickly because of how everyone reacted to it, which was to introduce a most popular, popular favorite. And because of that, of course, there was a lot of things said about why Black Panther got a nomination eventually. But this seems this year like this is, you know, popular favorites. These are fan favorite films. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think in a normal year we'd get something like Ford v Ferrari as a best picture nomination. Yeah.
Well, that said, Ford versus Ferrari does have perennial favorites, Christian Bale and Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Are we at a point now where it no longer surprises us that a Joker could get this many nominations? A few years ago, it would have been a huge deal.
Not after Black Panther last year, maybe. Mm.
Yeah, but also this isn't based on a comic book, right? So I think the difference here is that this is using a comic book character as source material and mining a made-up backstory for this said character, for Joker. I don't know why I'm pretending that I have to like sidestep it, but for Joker, right? And he's always been... I mean, if we remember, Heath Ledger won the Academy Award posthumously, right, for his portrayal. So I think Joker fits in very nicely with the Academy Award love for tortured heroes who are just kind of outsiders, and which is not to downplay the work that Joaquin Phoenix does into making this a real lived reality. But the character and the performance, I think, fits in very neatly into an Oscar kind of category. And the only reason that we in the past would not have considered it is because of its comic book origins, which I suppose post-Black Panther is less of a thing, but also post-Heath Ledger.
Do you think Joker is because the Academy buckled to pressure? Like, because every year we go like, will they nominate like this comic book movie, or will they nominate this big blockbuster movie, or the movie that made $1 billion at the box office? And the last few years, what they've done is they've sort of buckled to social media pressure and fan pressure and put those movies in. Like Black Panther, as good as that movie was, it shouldn't have been in Best Picture. That's just like my personal opinion. But it's obvious that they want to cater to like a growing fan base.
We're not just old.
Boring. We watch these movies. So do you think Joker's one of, you know, does it fall under that category?
Well, for me, Joker genuinely was a great film. Yeah. It was one of the best movies I watched last year. So I don't think it necessarily, while it does have, it's an easy play for the Academy where they were lucky enough to have a good movie that they could nominate, rather than having to do a sort of a retcon Black Panther. Like, no, we're going to pretend that we think this is more than what it is. I think Joker deserves it.
Can I just say something for a movie that I can't believe I'm going to call underrated or the underdog, considering it also has 10 nominations, but I feel like people don't love The Irishman. And I can understand that. It's a Martin Scorsese kind of... I don't think it's him necessarily following his own playbook, you know, play by play. But I get it. I mean, he's done lots of gangster movies. It is based on a story that has been fact checked, you know, and not necessarily found to come out well. And it features his mainstays. But I really enjoyed that film. I think there was something about the storytelling and the performances that felt kind of moving and oddly beautiful. And I didn't expect to say this, but having seen now a number of the Best Picture nominees, I think this one earned its minutes, which I really didn't think I would say. And yet somehow about this, 3.5 hour movie, it's the one of 1917, Joker, just that list of films, right? Even Marriage Story, that is kind of, I watched it, I think, 2 weeks ago. And since then, I've been thinking about it and thinking about it. And I didn't expect to say that, but I just wanted to show it a bit of love because I don't think it's getting a lot of play.
I haven't watched it yet, but I'm actually very much looking forward to it. If you guys have thoughts on the recently released Oscar nominations, if you have favorites, let us know. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can call us at 03-773-2900. This is Popcorn Culture, and we will be back after the break to talk more about the recently released Oscar nominations on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
야, 윗집 아줌마랑 IP 타임 암호를 거셨다 드디어.
와이파이도 다 끊기고.
어, 여깄네.
쏟아지면 와이파이를 줄까?
그래도 그 돌멩이 때문에 부모님 얼굴도 뵙고 좋더라, 건강들 하시고.
이거 이거 없으셔도
귀엽지? 네가 내 대신 얘 과외 선생님 좀 해줘라, 영어.
대학생인 척하라는 거야?
Welcome back to Popcorn Culture. This is Sharmila Ganesan with my regular co-hosts, Leetri Lynn and Arvind Uraj, as well as our special guest today, Julian Yap.
Jellicle Cat.
Jellicle Cat, yes.
I love the insistence.
Resolutely holding on to it. On that note, we are talking about Oscar nominations, as you might have guessed from that clip of Parasite that we just played. But clearly people can't get enough of these bad movies. So we've got a few other favorites that have been coming in.
Yeah, so this comes from numbers 8325. It says, what about Crash that won Oscar for Best Picture over Brokeback Mountain? Never really get the movie on Crash. And then there is one from Fadzli. This is about the Oscars. He says Tremors, one word Tremors. Then he says Uncut Gems was a snub, a victim of Adam Sandler's reputation, which is super interesting.
Yeah. So I think just to talk about Crash a little bit, that's one that really hasn't aged well. And I think that's an interesting effect actually of the Oscars, to give a movie a certain amount of shine that later on everyone's like, ooh, okay, we all kind of got gas lit by that movie. And Crash is one of those. I mean, it has everything. It has troublesome racial politics. It has troublesome sexual politics. It's just a really difficult thing. And yet, I think we were all seduced by the multi-layered storytelling and the, we're all connected.
Until it took the Oscar away from Brokeback Mountain. And correct. Then I was like,
precisely. So I think that's, I mean, an interesting afterglow of the Oscars. And I think it's worth later on revisiting whether or not that's going to happen to Joker, because Joker also suffers from, it's a great movie, but it suffers from some troublesome parts of its storytelling, you know, so just a thing.
And also the same thing that happened with Crash is going to happen. It's already started happening, of course, with social media. We move a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. It's happened with Green Book from last year. Already.
Yes.
And a little bit with Bohemian Rhapsody as well.
But I think, so speaking of snubs, right, because of the person talking about Uncut Gems, this year is also interesting because of what didn't make the list, I think. And one of the things to me that stuck out was the fact that Oscars don't seem to care about being so white anymore. It's a fairly white list, a fairly male list in many ways.
Sharmila, for God's sake, do they have to do this every year? They gave you last year. They gave you Moonlight.
They nominated Black Panther. I know, that's true.
For goodness sake.
No, I think it's me just being really sore that even though I haven't watched the movie yet, Greta Gerwig not getting a Best Director nomination for Little Women when everyone who's reviewed the movie has been saying it's amazing. But other than, say, like a Parasite, there's very little diversity in this list.
I struggle with Us because I thought Us was great. Mm-hmm. And the acting in it was perfection. And I really enjoyed it. I'm one of those people who enjoyed it more than Get Out. So so that's where my little my little impersonation of an Academy member was coming from, because it feels like, hey, we gave you Jordan Peele. Calm down. Yeah, you know, you got it. Lupita Nyong'o, you won.
So we're in a post-Oscar racial world, is what you're saying. We shouldn't care about these.
I think it might be how they feel.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe so, because it's so resolutely male on one hand, and then it is mostly white.
Well, the only acting nomination for a non-white actor is actually Cynthia Erivo for Best Actress. That's it, really. Everyone else is a white person.
Which feels a little bit, I mean, we haven't gotten Harriet in Malaysian cinemas yet, so we haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. But also, this is the year where we have had films like The Farewell that have actors who aren't white, and it's kind of strange, especially in the Best Actor category, which feels like it's come out straight of 2005. You know, we've got Antonio Banderas and Leonardo DiCaprio, Adam Driver, Joaquin Phoenix, Jonathan Pryce, and it's not necessarily saying they're not good.
Well, I suppose Antonio Banderas technically is not white.
Sure.
Speaking of the Academy sort of moving out of their comfort zone, so Apple Cross XX says, this year we have two Netflix-nominated movies and a foreign Asian film. It's a great change by the Academy, but I'm not sure I'm happy about it. However, totally rooting for Parasite.
And Parasite is actually the first Korean film to be nominated in the Best Film category. So that really is historic and great. And Netflix getting up there is interesting, considering that Roma just kind of barely, like,
squeezed
made its way in there.
still have people like Spielberg and Nolan talking about how movies released on Netflix shouldn't count as quote unquote actual movies. So
yeah,
so it's a big deal that the two of the highest nominated films are actually Netflix films.
Neither of them need to be seen on a big screen though. So that's the thing, right? Because they're both slow-paced character dramas. I mean, you can, I know one involves Jimmy Hoffa, but nonetheless, it is what it is. It's slow. A lot of it takes place in people's homes and restaurants. And both those movies share that sort of DNA, share that watchable on your phone, you know, quality. So there is something to that, I think. The fact that Netflix, I wonder if they'll continue making those sorts of films or whether they're eventually going to release something that is really event cinema and change that.
Also, I think it has been a concerted effort on streaming platforms' part because they knew that the only way that they're going to get ahead of even be, you know, part of the conversation when it comes to awards. This is, of course, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, you know, they're actually doing this. So going, looking at film festivals, of course, Parasite won at... won Best Director at Cannes last year. So they didn't manage to get Parasite, but they did manage to get, of course, The Irishman and everything. So this is not going to stop, it feels. It feels like Roma was just the first foot in the door. So
I actually missed the Parasite boat. I still haven't watched it, and I really want to. Yeah, so I'm wondering, you know, it's got 6 nominations, including Best Picture. How do you guys feel about it? Worth it?
Yeah, so 50-50. I think worth it because it's a good movie. Not worth it because I feel that it's the token throw-in that the Academy always does. Like every year they find that one token movie. Last year was Roma, this year is Parasite, and then next year it'll be something else that they want to put in there just to go like, hey, look, we're diverse. You know, it's a movie that's not in English.
And
so
it's got subtitles.
And it's got subtitles. You know, wow, you know, let's all pay attention to this movie. And it's also, it seems like a vicious circle where they don't nominate someone, that someone makes a big fuss about it, and then people go like, oh, because that person was snubbed, the Academy is so important. I feel like, especially in today's landscape and the way Hollywood works and the machine that it is, people don't have to be nominated by the Academy for it to be successful, because the success of films doesn't matter.
No,
And it doesn't rely on the Academy at all. Like Joker, despite its 11 nominations, did nothing to its success. Like, it still has $1 billion in the bank. People will still watch it for decades to come. People will still talk about it. And the Academy nominating Joker 11 times did nothing to sort of give Todd Phillips more leeway. It actually has sort of like zero effect on that movie.
Are we getting to a point where we're going to see more and more of these movies? As you mentioned earlier, Julian, most of these movies are already crowd pleasers. Mm-hmm. They've already been given the stamp of approval by the audience. Are the Oscars even something we pay attention to anymore?
Well, I think yes and no, right? Like it's an industry. The Oscars are an industry. They have the eyeballs. They have the dresses. They have the events. They have the gossip. You know, I think more than caring so much about the awards, they have all those different things. But I don't 100% agree that Parasite, or rather that if Parasite won, it would just be sort of a token win, or even that its nomination is a token thing. Because when I think about it, I think it's one of the best made films of last year. It's at least one of the best made films that I've seen.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I'm glad it's there. But also, I think that it's something that people like Todd Phillips, who will consistently get the chance to get huge amounts of money thrown at him, even after he's made Hangover 2 and 3. he will get those opportunities, whether he wins or doesn't. And I know that Bong Joon-ho is a big deal, right? He's made, besides Parasite, we would know him from things like Okja, we would know him from things like Snowpiercer, we would know him from all these other films that he's made. He's an international director. But I think him winning might open the door for other Korean movie makers to get financed. It might, you know, do the thing that at its best you hope the Oscars do. So I'd like to think that if there is significance, it would lie in that. But the reality of the situation is that's probably, I mean, that wave of hype is going to last.
The reality of the situation is that it's going to win Best Foreign Picture, and then they'll say, well, we've given it to them now.
Yeah.
Exactly with what Roma had
like,
last
what
year.
More do you want? That kind of thing.
Or they'll do a split. And they've been doing that increasingly these days, The director will go to one, best director will go to one film, and best picture will go to something else.
Yeah.
And that's how we get the Moonlight La La Land situation.
In like today's world, I would be more offended if the MCU didn't have representation. Like if you didn't have enough women or people of color in the MCU, that would be like a measure of success. Like, yeah, you know, give all the chances in the room, in the space. But the Academy, I'm at this point, I'm just like, it's what they do, and what they do doesn't mean very much. That's just basically where I stand when it comes to these things.
Mm. And I think after the Golden Globes, which was 2 weeks ago now, I think after there was a little uproar over, whoa, these are the films that won. Why? It's because the voting population of the Golden Globes are 90 people. Of course, the Academy is a lot bigger, but also it's sort of like we're looking at an awards show and we're looking to them to tell them what's right. But it's this very, very small group of people who are really all friends because they're all the same kind of people and this the same kind of audience. And that's how we get things like Oscar bait and Oscar worthy performances, because we know exactly what's going to tick all of their boxes. Mm. And I don't think that's going to stop. Because if we look at the best actress category specifically, Charlize Theron's role in Bombshell, a film that is politically driven, especially today, that is very tied to this industry, it's obviously going to make some waves, right? Like, look at Renee Zellweger doing a Judy Garland performance, where it's you can't separate it from Hollywood, like the way La La Land was. It's bound to make some ears prick up.
Do you guys have favorites already? I know we haven't watched all of the movies, but early favorites, things that you are sure is going to win?
For Best Picture, tough.
I feel like at least for Best Actor that Joaquin Phoenix is going to make it.
For sure.
And we're finally the only two comic book characters ever to have won an Oscar is going to be both Joker.
Yeah. I do think Joaquin Phoenix is kind of a lock, although my little heart does beat for Adam Driver because I thought he was beautiful in Marriage Story, just excellent. And that, I think, in another year, and maybe from another studio, would have traditionally been a lock. You know, it's the Kramer versus Kramer of it all. Like it's a great character-driven piece where he does nothing showy. He doesn't have prosthetics. Like, he's just, it's just him, right?
Or mask.
Yeah, correct. But I do think that Joaquin Phoenix has it on lock. Do you guys have a best film? I think we should do the one that you hope for and then the one that you think is really going to take it.
So I'm going to sort of go out on a limb, because this is not a hard prediction since I haven't watched all of them. I feel like what they're going to do is do one of those like safe ones for Best Picture, either Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, again, the love affair with Hollywood. I love that movie.
Yeah.
But really, in comparison to the rest on this list, I don't feel that it's deserving. But it's either going to be that or like a Martin Scorsese. Like, here, let's give the grand old, grand old, I was going to say
he's
Dane.
The oldest living director. Maybe the last one we might be able to see.
So I feel like one of those is going to win Best Picture.
Do you think Joker's going to win with its 11 noms?
I don't feel like it deserves a Best Picture.
No,
almost.
I wouldn't mind it winning.
I don't think Todd Phillips is going to get Best Director.
I don't think
I don't think so.
I don't think he has enough friends in the Academy in the traditional sense to actually get a look.
I mean, if Bradley Cooper was voting, yes, but... You know.
I don't know. Best Picture is a toughie. I think that I agree. I mean, The Irishman has the old, you know, kind of classic movie pool. It's also got Martin Scorsese. But I think that there is a... it's good. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know where I was going with that. But I do think that there is the possibility of that winning. But I don't know if it will. Because normally what happens with Best Picture is it's won other things. You can usually see it sweep, right? It cuts a whole path through the entire ceremony.
Also, 1917 would be the only precedent that we really have so far.
Correct. But then, having said that, like you said, we're seeing them split the wins all sorts of different ways now. So the traditional methods of predicting the Oscar win they don't work anymore.
Mm.
Mm. So I don't know.
Julian, any early favorites?
It's definitely going to be Parasite. I mean, I haven't seen Little Women. Mm. Yeah, but I don't know how that's undeniable.
I don't
for
think
me.
Little Women's yeah. going to win, even yeah. if yeah.
no.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Parasite. Yeah. I really am.
It's
I just
got everything that should work.
And I want to see Bong Joon-ho give a speech because he's magnificent. Like, he's very funny.
His translator, incredible.
Correct. So I just want to watch that, if for nothing else. But I'm worried they'll give it to Martin Scorsese then.
Okay, that's it. I'm going to make the basic choice. Like, I wouldn't mind if Joker won. Like, I honestly love that movie. That is one of the movies that, like, moved me last year, like, genuinely moved me, despite all the media backlash and stuff. But I honestly wouldn't mind if it won.
Okay, well, on that note, we do have to wrap up today. But if you have thoughts on who you think is going to win the Oscar for the various categories, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We are also on the various social media platforms on Instagram, on Twitter, as Popcorn Culture. Just look for at BFM Popcorn. That's it from us today, guys. You can also write to us at movies@bfm.my. This has been Popcorn Culture on BFM
89.9. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.